RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Andrew Nicol is a financial advisor and property investment expert. He's managing partner of Opez Partners. Andrew bought his first home at 19 and is founder of Opez as well as a financial advisor. Together with Ed McKnight, he heads up the Property Academy podcast. You can listen to them on all the platforms. And we asked Andrew on RCR to talk about a recent article he wrote. Should Christopher Luxon lower his rent? Andrew Nicol is with us. Hi, Andrew. Thanks for coming on RCR.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Opez means what?
So the funny story about how we started or founded the name is the two other business partners that I started the company with, we went and drank and said, what the hell are we going to call this thing? And one of them is a private school boy, and so he's smarter than me, and he said, yeah. I did Latin. Wonder what the Latin word is for wealth. And it's Opez. So we decided, okay, well, we're going to partner with people to build their wealth. Let's call the company Opez Partners.
Okay, and was that like an instantaneous thing? Yeah, let's go with that, or did you have to think about
it? That was about the fifth drink in, to be honest. okay. So there were a few names kicked around before that, but we arrived at it and we were happy with it, and 12 years later we're still using it.
Okay, so that story that I just mentioned, I think it starts off you describing Christopher Luxon being interviewed by Jack Tame, obviously on Q&A. And Jack asks, are you going to lower your rent on your properties? And Luxon replies, it's not about me, Jack. So who is it about, Andrew? Who is it about?
Well, I think what they were trying to get at, or what Jack was trying to get at, is, okay, well, now we're going to give some tax relief to property investors. So if you're going to give some tax relief, then they surely should pass that on to their tenants, which makes sense, right? At a high level, that makes sense. But the problem is the interest deductibility rules that were introduced that meant that landlords were paying more tax. They were basically paying tax as if they didn't have a mortgage. So imagine how profitable your investment properties would be if they didn't have a mortgage. You'd make a huge profit, right?
Yeah.
So then you pay tax, but then you're still going to pay your mortgage because that is there. And so as a result, over the last few years, property investors have found that they're probably making a loss on their rental properties from a cash flow standpoint week to week, but then they get a tax bill at the end of the year. Now, one property investor that owns quite a number of properties, when I listened to him talk about it, he said, well, this just makes it, because it takes it from really bad to just bad. Like the cash flow is still really, really bad. So whilst it would be nice to pass on that relief to your tenants, there's still a loss for most property investors out there. If you buy a property today and you do it using what we call the no cash needed method, so you borrow some money against your house and you borrow some money against the rental property, you borrow 100%, you are going to be topping up that rental property somewhere to the tune of $300 to maybe $700 a week in some instances. So in a lot of cases right now, a landlord, if they're borrowing 100% to buy an investment property, they're going to be putting in as much as the tenant is. So if the tenant's paying $600 a week, I might be topping up $500 or $600 a week. Now, let's not get it wrong. Landlords are still getting a good deal because hopefully over time that property goes up in value. They're wanting that property to increase in value. They'll get their payday later on. But right now, it's not as if there's a whole lot of extra cash coming in. Most landlords are making a bit of a loss.
Yeah, but also housing needs to be provided, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
That's a service to the country. People have to have somewhere to live.
Yeah, and we're doing a pretty bad job of it at the moment. We've got 35,000 people on the wait list for emergency housing, or 30,000 might be the most recent number. That's atrocious. There are families living in cars and motels. We are failing people. But this is where we need private landlords. And I kind of think, I'm a private landlord, and I have a company that encourages people to be private landlords. So I'm completely biased. But when you think about the fact that, well, the government isn't able to satisfy the need for housing, let's make it as easy as possible for people to become landlords and actually have properties. Because if we have more landlords and we have more supply, that will naturally bring the cost of rent down or not increase it as much as it has been. Over the last few years, there have been investors that have been old-timers that have exited the market and said, hey, this is a bit hard now. Healthy homes might not suit them. I think healthy homes is great, by the way, but there's all these reasons where people think, okay, I don't want to be a landlord anymore, so they've sold those properties. And it is good, again, that we're encouraging first-time buyers. First-time buyers are at an all-time high. That's an awesome win. But not everyone is in a position to buy their house, even if it comes onto the market, their dream house, or maybe they don't want to. Maybe they're living in Auckland right now because that's where their job is, but they really want to be living in Christchurch. We need private landlords to fill that gap.
Yeah, it's not compulsory that you have to buy a house.
No. I bought my first house, I think, when I was 36-ish. So I'm 40 now. It was 4 years ago. I bought my first house. I've been buying rental properties for forever.
Oh, so that's your house to live in, you're talking about.
My house to live in. I bought my first rental property when I was 19, but I only bought my first house to live in at 36 because I wanted to rent an apartment in inner city Christchurch because that suited me. It would have made a terrible investment. It wouldn't have suited me long term, but it suited me right then. And so I paid my $500 a week rent or whatever it was, and any property that I bought as a rental property.
What was the rationale for those rule changes made by the Labor government? Because it seems to me it put rents up ultimately. And, you know, you can tell us by how much. Was that to stop runaway kind of opportunistic investors? I'm not saying you're one of them, but, you know, to put the handbrake on that, because why impose extra costs on everyday people?
Yeah.
And the thing that they have to have, and that is accommodation, somewhere to live.
Yeah. So, I'd like to think that their heart was in the right place, right? They were trying to they thought they were going to even the playing field. So if I own my own house and I have a mortgage on it, that mortgage is not interest, that's not deductible. So why should a landlord get the ability to deduct their mortgage? Well, the answer is because the rental property is an income generating asset. There's an income linked to it. So you think about it like a business, right? If I own a business and I buy a commercial premises for my business, or I buy a whole bunch of machinery and I put that on a loan, that loan is interest deductible. Of course it is, because I have to pay that. When Labor introduced that the interest deductibility rules, Treasury and the IRD both said, do not do it.
Do not. Right. Okay.
And they did it anyway. I actually wonder if it was kind of to get the votes, right? I might just be being a grumpy old cynic now, but maybe to get the votes, because people didn't understand the implications of it. And they framed it very well. They framed it as a loophole that landlords were using to exploit the tax system. What a load of bollocks. It wasn't at all. That is a true cost of running your business, which is rental properties in that instance. So absolutely, it was a legitimate expense. You take something like interest versus depreciation, right? Depreciation on the chattels of your house, you don't pay that every year, but you can claim that as an interest deduction, a tax deduction. But so you can understand, okay, well, that's just a book transaction. The interest on your mortgage, you have to pay that. That's a real cost. Of course, that should be a tax deduction. But because they introduced that, you're right. What did happen is then, okay, well, if I'm losing a couple of $100 a week and then I have to pay $100 a week extra in tax, well, I'm going to look to increase my rent. Now, I think the misconception is that that was passed on to tenants in its entirety. I don't think the data supports that. I think that the major reason that rents have gone up the way they have is because there's not as much supply as we need, but also interest rates have gone up. So I think it's kind of a combination of a few things: the interest deductibility, the lack of supply, but also higher interest rates. But interest rates have, you know, gone from maybe 2 or 3% to about 7%. So it's not like that entire cost has been passed on to tenants, because you couldn't do that. People could not afford to wear that kind of increase.
So you get a squeeze going on.
Squeeze, yeah. And so landlords absolutely are feeling it right now. I just met with a couple who have got two rental properties, one in Auckland, which is pretty highly mortgaged, and one in Hamilton, which is in negative equity at the moment because the property price value's gone down since they bought it. They have only owned it for about a year. Now, they're topping up their portfolio by about $550 a week at the moment.
Well, that's significant after you've paid everything else, right?
Yeah, and so they're absolutely hoping for capital growth in the future. And as interest rates ease, that will come down as well. But it does hurt. And the danger that we've got right now is that a nice couple like that that are renting out their properties at very fair rental amounts might say, hey, this is a bit tough on our family. We're not going away on holiday like we want to be. We're topping this up and we're not paying down our personal mortgage as fast as we want. So why don't we sell one of those properties and we'll figure it out later on. Now, all of a sudden, you've got another property that isn't available for those people that need rental accommodation.
So does it really make sense, you know, in the real world to incentivize private landlords to create rental properties at a bigger scale? Because you mentioned those numbers, and maybe in those numbers there are tenants that you don't want to have. I accept that. You put them in motels. It's all right for the motel owner. They're getting top dollar and the checks never bounce. That's another thing. But to incentivize it, so kind of flip the thinking.
Yeah, so I think the government is doing that and is doing a pretty good job at that. So when the debt-to-income ratio rules come in July, they won't have an impact right now because interest rates are so high that people can't borrow it at five or six, six or seven times their income anyway. So they won't have a meaningful impact right now. They will in the future as interest rates come down. Now, there's a carve-out. There's an exclusion. If you're buying a new property, then it's not tested with that debt to income ratio rule. Similarly, you can buy a new property with a smaller deposit than buying an existing property, either if it's for an owner occupied or for an investor. So the government is trying to encourage more housing, and they're doing it in a way that allows people to buy more new builds, whether it be an investment or owner occupied. So I do think that's a good way of encouraging private landlords.
How long do you think these interest rates are going to stay as high as you are talking, realistically?
So they're high at the moment because inflation is out of control. We need to get it back under control. And the Reserve Bank forecasts that they're going to be within their tolerance band between 1% and 3% by the end of the year. Everyone seems to kind of agree that that seems like a reasonable.
Do you agree?
Yep. But it will be at the thick end of that. It will be 3%. Now, that won't mean that they'll bring down interest rates then because they can't bring them down and then have us all go berserk over Christmas spending money. So the reality is we'll probably see higher than normal interest rates for another 18 months.
Right. And as they ease, then the equations become more friendly, do they?
Yeah, they do. And then more people enter the market. So if you're an investor right now, the advice would be you're not going to buy cheaper than you can today, depending on where you're buying. But if you're buying a property in Auckland right now, there's not that much competition. There's a lot of listings available, so you can get a good deal. The cash flow is going to suck. You have to get used to that. You have to accept that. There's no perfect market. There's always a good factor and a bad factor. And as interest rates ease and cash flow gets better, more people will be interested in investing, or more people will be interested in buying or spending more money on their owner-occupied or investment property.
Curious question. You mentioned negative equity just before. That, of course, is a term that no one ever wants to hear. If you've got a property, even I've got a property, I don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
How wide ranging is it now? How many homeowners are technically in negative equity? Is it a small amount? Is it a growing amount? What's your assessment?
I think I don't have the exact numbers. Ed would have that for you, but he's more of a nerd than me. I'll tell you what I do know, though. Working with investors over the last couple of years, if you bought in the last couple of years, you're probably in negative equity at the moment.
Right.
Because if you're borrowing 100%, the market has dropped. Now, that's a real problem if you have to sell today. If you don't have to sell today and you're buying for the long term, which is what you should do as an investor, that's okay. You've just got to weather the storm over the next wee while and be really realistic about it. The worst thing you can do is go into your ANZ app and see the value every day and panic about it and then sell the property. As soon as you do that, you're going to crystallize your losses. Again, there's plenty of reasons why people have to sell early: separation, or cash flow is just really, really bad and they didn't plan for it, or any number of reasons that mean that they have to. But the best thing you can do as an investor is weather the storm right now. Auckland is by our modelling, more undervalued than it has ever been. Great time to buy, but it means that if you bought in the last couple of years, you've probably got a property that's worth less than you paid for it. And that feels a bit rough as an investor, even an experienced one. So you really have to focus on what the long term looks like. But if we look at back when Auckland was as undervalued as it is today, last time it was as undervalued as it is today, that was in 2008, right in the middle of the GFC. What did the market do in Auckland over the following 5 years? Well, it went up by about 50%. So there is some light at the end of the tunnel. You've just got to get to the end of the tunnel, right?
You just got to sit tight, as they say.
Well, you think about Wellingtonian. So in parts of Wellington, the market dropped 40%. Ooh. If you're a first-time buyer, you saved 20% deposit. You did really well. You're still backwards. The best thing, again, those people can do is weather the storm.
Okay. Couple more questions. What was the generated increase in rents from the Labor move? Do we know? Can we put a figure on it? How much more did it put on rents?
Over the Labor term, I would say we saw some major increases, like 10% in some places. It was way more than the normal increase. Normal increase is about 4.7% a year. That's the long-term average. Some years it'll be lower, some years it'll be higher. I think you were close to double that a lot of the time.
And the mean is what? It's $600 or something a week is the mean?
I don't know off the top of my head exactly what it is today, but certainly like in places like Queenstown, it is way, way higher than that. In places like Wellington, you can often be quite a lot higher than that. $600 a week sounds about right for most people, but then, of course, you have areas where you can get significantly more. The other challenge at the moment is if people are suffering because of interest rates and we're taking properties off the private rental market and putting them onto Airbnb, that's one less house that we have to be able to offer, and that puts more pressure on rental markets as well.
I remember paying $300 for a family home on the edge of the harbour in Wellington 20 years ago and thinking that was a bit rough. So how far have we come? Here's the last question. Should Luxon lower his rent?
It would probably be a good political look, but the reality is he's probably still making a bit of a loss, and it's very, very hard to get it back up afterwards. So I don't imagine he will, and I don't probably think he should, unless he's the Prime Minister, in which case you probably want to set a standard that, okay, well, I'm doing this because I've got a bit of a break, but chances are he's making a loss as well.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to say, yeah, okay, because that would commit you to something on live TV, but always be prepared for the gotcha. Andrew, how do people get in touch with you?
So you can get us on our website, opespartners.co.nz, which is O-P-E-S, partners.co.nz. We have a huge amount of information on our website. So even if you just want to learn about property investment, we have a webinar come out once a month. We just had one last night. We have a podcast every single day and have had for the last 5 years.
Boy, that's an effort. I know what that's like. Good on you for that.
Every single day for the last 5 years. Christmas, birthdays, everything.
Christmas.
We don't miss a day. We do 3 articles a week, 2 videos a week. So there's so much content on our website. So even if people just want to get familiar so that they can take action at the right time for them, that's how you do it.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.